I know that your father's Rabbi Ravinsky, but you're going to be Rabbi Ravinsky as well. And it's just so great to see young men and young women that I know since their early ages, and Baruch Hashem, they've grown to be so wonderfully mature and growing in Torah and Yerushalayim, and I'm sure that we're going to see great things from all of you. When the Chazon Ish moved to Eretz Yisrael and he came to Bnei Brak, the Chazon Ish, many of you know, was the Gadol Hador. He came from Vilna, and it is said that Rabbi Chaim Moshe wrote a letter to those people in Eretz Yisrael who did not know yet Avram Yeshaya Karelitz. That's why he was called the Chazon Ish. Chazon means the vision of Ish, Avram Yeshaya Karelitz. Yud Shin is, of course, the Ish, the part of the word Ish. And people said, Ola Ari Mibavel, the lion has come up from Bavel, from the Golos, he has come to Eretz Yisrael. In other words, he would be the lion, he would be the great Torah scholar. And he had brilliant insights, and of course, all of Klal Yisrael evolved around everything that he had to say. But when he came to Bnei Brak, it wasn't like it is today. It was farmland. And he moved in on a certain block, and there were no lights at night. And then suddenly somebody decided, you know what, this great tzaddik is living here, so why don't we just, if we're going to put a street light, let's put a street light right near his home. And of course it was much safer for him to walk at night. And then after the light was there a couple weeks, somebody came over to the Chazon Ish and said, Rebbe, what do you say? Isn't it wonderful that you have this light in front of your home? And of course, as only a Gadol Hador, only a great Torah scholar could come up with this insight, he said, you know, I noticed something very, very interesting with this light now that it's in front of my home. I noticed that when I am down the block, far away from the light, my shadow seems very, very big. But as I get closer to the light, and I'm standing under the light, my shadow is very, very small. And it's interesting, you'll try that. When you're far away from the light, it casts a very long shadow. But as you come very close to the light, the shadow is minimal. And he said to me, that's a great lesson. Because the shadow, the light rather, represents the light of Torah. And so when somebody is far away from Torah, he thinks, wow, I'm such a great yid, I do so many great things. But the closer somebody comes to Torah, the closer somebody comes to the light of Torah, he realizes that he really hasn't covered that much ground, and there's so much that he has to learn and that he has to grow. And perhaps, as we stand just a couple of hours, a couple of days, less than 2-3 days away from Hanukkah, and that light of Hanukkah is approaching us, and we come closer to that light, maybe then, just as we get closer to the light, we can reevaluate who we really are and see how far we have to grow and what we have accomplished and what we can accomplish. And not to think that we've covered so much ground and we're so great, but we're all wonderful, but there's all a lot that we can learn. And as we get closer to that light, we'll become wiser and smarter. And it's very interesting. The Gemara tells us something, and here I'm going to tell you how to become smart and how to become wealthy. And then when you daven Ma'ariv, we're going to see which one that you really want to do. The Gemara says, Hareitza Sheyachkim, if you want to get smart, so when you're standing, Shemin Esther, let's say east is this way, so it says Yadrim, you face your feet a little bit towards the south. Why the south? Because the Menorah was in the southern part of the Beis HaMikdash, and so therefore the southern part of the Mishkan as well. And the Menorah represents the Or HaTorah. So when you're davening Shemin Esther and your feet are together, if you bend a little bit towards the right, it's going to show that you want to get towards the light of the Menorah, you want to get Chochmah. However, V'shiashir, if let's say you want to get wealthy, so then you stand with your feet a little bit to the left. So you better hope that everybody's closing their eyes when they're davening Shemin Esrei, because we're going to watch. But I know some guys daven like this, you know, because they want to get both. But Yishayashir, why, if you daven to the north, that's where the Shulchan was. The Shulchan represents the Mezainis. It represents Parnosa. So again, so the Gemara says, Haroitza Sheyachim, if you want to get smart, you got to face towards the light of the Menorah. So that's what we're going to do tonight. We're going to try to face the light of Hanukkah and try to learn some lessons, how we can grow and how we can improve and learn these great lessons from Hanukkah. As Jason mentioned, I have the wonderful, wonderful opportunity in one of the trips Rabbi Ravinsky's father, the real Rabbi Ravinsky so far, he, Mechaya, went with me, and one of the places that we went to was in Lithuania. And it was a tremendous, tremendous moving trip. We started out in Vilna, and then we went to Ponovich and Telz and Kelm and many, many places where great yeshivas were in the past, like Radin and Amir. But then when we went to Ponovich, the town of Ponovich, many of you know that in Bnei Brak today you have a big Ponovich yeshiva, and it was started by the Ponovich Rav, but he started that yeshiva back when he was in the town of Ponovich, and that's why it's called the Ponovich yeshiva. So when we stood outside that yeshiva, unfortunately, that yeshiva today, you can see it, it's a building of 12 windows, and really, Beis HaMedrash, or a shul, is supposed to have 12 windows. I presume because it represents the 12 shvatim. And that building, today, you can see it. It has 12 windows. That's how it was built. Unfortunately, it became a bakery. So, of course, you know, some guy had to make a crack of a joke and say, you know, if you, you know, really want to build a yeshiva, you need a lot of dough. And that's why the yeshiva became a bakery. But okay, we let that go. But anyway, but the point was that outside the Ponovich yeshiva, I told them a very interesting kasha that the Ponovich Rav asked, and he gave such a brilliant answer, and it gives us our first lesson tonight, a yesod in life. The Pasuk tells us in Tehillim that David HaMelech says to Hashem, in Kuf Mem Dalet, Pasuk Zayin, Shalach Yodecha Mimoraim, Hashem, stretch out your hand from above, Pitzeini Vahatzileini Mimayim Rabin. Hashem, save me and release me and rescue me, Mimayim Rabin, from the difficult waters, the stormy waters, Miyad B'nei Necha, from the Goyim. In other words, the Goyim of the world are considered Mayim Rabin, stormy waters. So the Ponovich Rav asked, but we know in Ivadia it says, V'haya Beis Yaakov Eish, Beis Yaakov is going to be a fire. So, and Beis Yosef Lahava, Beis Yosef is a flame. So if that's the case, so Klal Yisrael is considered fire. The Goyim are considered water. What happens when water and fire get together? The water puts out the fire. So the Ponovich Rav asked, is that what's Chas V'Shalom in store for Klal Yisrael? That the Goyim that are water are going to put out the fire that are Yidden? And he gives a tremendous teretz and a tremendous yesod in life. And he says, when does water put out fire? That's when they touch each other. But what if you have a pot in between? You have a mechitza in between. When you have a pot of water and you have the fire underneath, then the fire controls the water. The fire controls how hot, and the water would even be able to dissipate. But you have to have, that mechitza in the middle. And that's what he says. If we live in Golas, and we let the Goyim overtake our lives, and we think the way they do, and we dress the way they do, and we talk the way they do, and in a sense we're touching them, then Chas V'Shalom, the Goyim can overtake what the Yidden are supposed to accomplish. But if we keep a mechitza, even if the mechitza is in our mind, and the walls of the Beis Medrash are that mechitza, the walls of a Yiddish home, that is the mechitza, and you build that mechitza, oh, then the fire controls the water. And if that's the case, then we can understand something so beautiful. The Medrash asks a question. Yirmiyah writes in Perek Yudalev Pasuk Tezayin, Zayis Ranon, a leafy or olive tree, Yefei Peri Toyar. That's what that beautiful fruit, that beautiful fruit, that olive tree, that's what Korah Hashem Shemeich, Hashem has called it your name. In other words, Klal Yisrael is like a Zayis. So the Medrash asks in Shmoyis Rabba Lamed Vov Aleph, Maro Yirmiyah Limshal Avasenu Kezayis. Why did Yirmiyah say that Klal Yisrael is a Zayis? Now watch this, and you can all test this Friday night before you bench the Chanukah Licht. Take a little bit of oil. You will not believe it if you've never done this before. Take a little bit of oil and take it together with water. You will see that the oil will rise to the top. Elakol Hamashkin, you take soda, you take wine, you take booze, you take anything, you mix it all together, it all becomes one big mishmash together. Kol Hamashkin Misarvim Zebizeh, Vashemen, Eina Misarev Elaimed. It stands separately. That's what the Ponovich Rav is telling us. We are separate from the Goyim. Kach Yisrael Eina Misarvim Im Oivid Kachovim. We keep our distance. We have to keep the ghetto of the mind, as my mother, Alat Shalom, used to call it. If you keep that distance, you keep that barrier, then we can even live in Golas, and we know that the Goyim are not going to have an influence on us. And as a matter of fact, but that's what the Pasuk tells us. Bonecha, your children, kishesile zeisim, saviv l'shulchanecha. It's the bracha that I give every single one of you. Every one of you should be zeicha to be parents and grandparents. And your children should be like olive plants. What does it mean, olive plants? Ki eitz hazayis, eina makabel hakova. You can't mix when if you're growing two trees together, the zayis is not going to accept another tree. It can't be murkav, it can't be blended with another tree. And also, ki eitz hazayisim, lachim kol yemais hashona, kachem behoidam. The zayis is a tree that grows a whole year. It's always fresh. And that's the bracha b'necho k'shesilei zeisim, that a yid, our children and grandchildren, and we ourselves should always be fresh and vibrant like the zayis. So it's interesting. We're trying to show that the zayis is separate. And you know, isn't it incredible? The only yontif throughout the whole year that we show that we're different. We're showing to the goyim. Pasuminisa, we put it out in the window. Why are we putting it out in the window by Hanukkah? We don't eat matzah in public. We don't build a sukkah in public. We don't blow shofar in public. Why are we making the Hanukkah lift in public? What's the inyan of the Pasuminisa here? And even if when you say Al HaNisim by the Megillah on Purim, but we don't read the Megillah in public, it's the only time of the whole year that we go public. You know why? Because I believe the answer is because we're the Zayas. Because we want to show that we're exclusive, that we're different, that we can show the light to the world. The light symbolizes that a Yid is the light of the world. That the Yid is supposed to be the example that he sets to the world. So that Chag, that shows that we're separate than the Goyim, we're proud of that fact. We're proud that we're exclusive. We're proud that we are different. It's very interesting when we say in Al HaNisim, we say in Al HaNisim these words, Kisha'omda Malchus Yovan Harusha. When the Greek wicked nation, the kingdom, they got up Al Amcha Yisrael, what did they want to do? Lashkicham Terasecha. We have to know that Hanukkah is celebrated in a spiritual way. And you will see when we end the speech, I will tell you something that is absolutely incredible. You'll never forget it for the rest of your lives. You'll repeat it 20 times over Hanukkah. But we're going to build up to that. But the idea is that Hanukkah, what the Yevonim wanted to do is they wanted that we should forget the Torah. Because that's what a Yid is all about. And I want to tell you something fascinating. Many of you know that Rav Meir Shapiro was the one who started and he created the Daf Yomi. He was an electrifying speaker. A very, very dynamic speaker. A great orator. And he had tremendous charisma. And he got up at that speech at the Agudas Yisrael Convention, or the Knesset Gedolah rather, when he wanted to present the idea of the Daf Yomi. Listen to what he said, how brilliantly he learned his Gemara in Yevamos Kuf Chof Aleph, Amud Aleph. The Gemara tells us this story. The Gemara says that Rabbi Gamliel was once on a boat. And he was on a boat and he had a whole bunch of Talmidim that were on the boat. And all of a sudden, there was a tremendous storm. And his boat was breaking up, Rabbi Gamliel's boat, and he knew he had to get back to shore. And he looked out in the water, and he saw there was another boat. And Rabbi Akiva was on that boat, but that boat was breaking up quicker than Rabbi Gamliel's boat. And what happened was Rabbi Gamliel was able to get his boat to shore. But he looked out, and he saw that Rabbi Akiva's boat was breaking up. And he comes out to shore and he sees that Rabbi Akiva's there. He's giving a shir to his Talmidim. And he says to Rabbi Akiva, he says, Mihelcho, how did you get up there? How did you manage? How did you save yourself? Omartilo, he said to me, Bini, my child, let me tell you. He said, Omale, he said, Daf shel sfina nizdaman li. The daf of the boat, the daf literally means a board. The board of the boat broke up and I used it as a raft. That's the simple meaning. I held on to that daf, I held on to that raft, and that's how I was able to get myself to shore. V'chol gal v'gal, and he says, every wave that came over me, shavolai, na'nesili roshi, my head was bobbing and weaving, so I wouldn't be hit by these stormy waves, and I held on to that daf, I held on to that raft. Zok Rameh Shapiro, we can understand the Gemara in a deeper way. That a Yid, as the Mashal says, that this, every generation has waves and waves of immorality, waves and waves of assimilation, waves and waves of secularism. How does a Yid get protected from those terrible galim, from those waves? He holds on to the daf. He holds on to the daf which is Gemara. And it doesn't mean only the daf of Gemara for men. It means for women as well. Not the daf, but it means the Tanakh that they have to learn, the Musa that they have to learn, the Hashkafa that they have to learn, the Chumash that they have to learn, the Halachas that they have to learn. That daf represents learning Torah. And I'll tell you something very interesting. Rabbi Chana Wasserman was a Talmud of the Chavetz Chaim. And he once asked the Chavetz Chaim a great question. He said, you know, if the Malach fought with one of the others, why did he fight only with Yaakov? Why did he fight with Avraham Avinu? Why did the Malach, the Satan, why did he wait till the fight with the third of the others? So how many people over here understand Yiddish? Just raise your hand. Okay, I'm going to say it in Yiddish anyway, just so you should get the flavor of how the Chavetz Chaim said it, and of course I'm going to translate. So Rabbi Chanan asked, why did the Malach wait to fight only with Yaakov Avinu? So you know what the Chavetz Chaim answered? The Satan Sa'artamnit Ayid Kandabnin Ekem Fastin Ekem Veinin Agansetog Abinit Lernin. The Satan doesn't care. Let a Yid do chesed a whole day. Let him cry a whole day. Let him do daven a whole day, as long as he doesn't learn Torah. Torah is the thing that carries us from one generation to the other. Avada, every Yid has to do chesed. No question about it. That's the essence of what a Yid is all about, Avraham Avinu. Every Yid has to daven. That's Yitzchak. But the essence, the thing that carries us from one generation to the other is the Liman HaTorah. Whether it's Halacha, whether it's Chumash, whether it's Tanakh, whether it's Musar. And that's why, that's what the Goyim understood. Lashkicham Teresecha. That's how they wanted to kill us out. They wanted to make sure that we don't have that spiritual connection to what Hashem is all about. So I want to tell you now a story. This is one of the greatest stories that I ever heard in my life. It is so moving and so inspirational. I don't have it in my book because I just heard it a few weeks ago. And just last week, I checked it out with the person to whom it happened. So I want to tell it to you exactly, and it's just the most remarkable thing. There is a fellow, his name is Rabbi Pluchak, who is the Rosh Yeshiva of a yeshiva in Baropar called Derech Chaim. So he has a son, Rabbi Moshe, who's also a big Talmud Chacham, and gives a shir in the yeshiva. So every summer, it seems that there's a camp in the mountains called Camp Maris, and they have a kollel from a chanchim. Mechanchim, those guys that are rebbeim throughout the year, so they come to learn every day in Camp Maris. So he also was learning in Camp Maris. One afternoon, a couple years ago, a guy comes in, he's carrying an art scroll Gemara, a balabas from a bungalow colony across the way, and they begin talking. And the guy looks very upbeat, this balabas. But he tells Rabbi Pluchak that Nebuchadnezzar has yena machla. He's got liver cancer. But he seemed very upbeat. He seemed very positive. So he said to Rabbi Pluchak, said, I see that you're very upbeat. He says, yeah, thank God I have my Oscar Gemara. I'm able to make a connection to Hashem because I wasn't able to learn Gemara as a kid, but now I can learn Gemara and I feel connected to what Yiddishkeit is all about. And every day he would come, and of course he saw they were very big Talmidei Chacham, and so whatever he was learning, he would ask different people, he would ask different questions. It came near the end of the summer. One day, Rabbi Pluchak takes a look at this balabas, and he sees he's very down. And he goes over to him and he says, I see that you're not in the same mood that you were. You're not in the frame of mind as you were previously. He says, Rabbi, what should I say? I'm really depressed. He says, the illness has progressed. And he said, well, what about your learning? Doesn't your learning give you like a chiyus? He said, I'll tell you the truth, Rabbi. I was thinking about it. Who cares? Who cares if I learn? I mean, you guys are big Talmidei Chachamim. You learn a lot and big Tzadikim, well, I'm nothing. Well, it was to make a difference what I learn. I struggle with the Gemara every single day. So Rabbi Pluchak told me that it was a nes, mamish, a miracle, that the night before he had heard this story on a Jewish radio station. He heard a story about a very famous conductor, an Italian fellow. Those of you studying music will surely know the name, Arturo Toscanini. Arturo Toscanini lived until 1957. He was 90 years old. He was a tremendous, tremendous perfectionist. Every single note had to be played exactly the way he wanted it. If you go on Google, you'll see that they tell a story that in the middle of a concert, he once broke one of the violinist's strings because he felt he wasn't playing right. You can imagine. Okay, he was a little mature of Midas, but he was a perfectionist. So there was a biographer who was writing a biography on Toscanini. And he would come to his house very often to interview him. And one night he called him up, he said, I'd like to come tonight to continue our talks. He said, you can't come tonight. He said, why not? He said, because tonight I'm listening to a concert over shortwave radio. And this is a symphony orchestra that I directed many times. But I couldn't be there tonight, and so I want to hear exactly how the conductor is conducting that symphony orchestra. He said, I won't say a word. He says, you promise you won't say a word? I don't want any interruptions. No, I just want to watch how you listen to that concert. Fine, you can come. The guy Tucker comes, the reporter comes, he doesn't say a word. And after about 35 minutes when the concert is over, the writer says, wow, that was beautiful, wasn't it? And Toscanini says, no, it wasn't. He said, what do you mean it wasn't? It was so beautiful. He said, no, there are 120 musicians that are supposed to be playing in that symphony orchestra. Among those 120 musicians are 15 violinists. There were only 14 there. He's thinking, what about Gaiva? What, he can tell over the radio that there's only 14 out of 15? That's out of his mind. How could you tell that over the radio? But he didn't want to say anything because he didn't want to get him upset. He's not going to let him write his biography. But he's a newspaper reporter. So the next morning he calls out of town where that symphony was. And he says, find out for me, how many violinists showed up that night to the concert? And they tell him, 14 out of 15. Toscanini was right. He couldn't believe it. He goes back to Toscanini. And he says, you know, I owe you an apology. Last night I was positive that you were just being haughty, that you were just trying to show off, that you were able to know that one violinist was missing. Please, Your Honor, explain it to me. How could you have known the difference? He says, there's a great difference between me and you. He says, you're part of the listening audience. To you, everything sounds the same. It sounds wonderful. But I'm the conductor. A conductor has to know every single note of music that's being played. I knew that there were certain notes that were supposed to be played by that violinist, and they were not played. So to the unsophisticated ear, it all sounds the same, but I knew because I'm the conductor, and I understood that that note was missing. So Rabbi Plouchek says to this fellow, he says, maybe to me, it's no difference that you're learning, but to the conductor of the World Symphony, he knows every note of Torah that's supposed to be performed. And if there's one guy out there that's not learning, and he was supposed to learn, the conductor of the World Symphony knows the difference. And the man smiled. He was so relieved. And he just felt so wonderful about that concept. And that winter, Rabbi Plouchek told me, he met the son of this man. And he said, how's your father? And he said he passed away. He said, I'm so sorry to hear that. He was a wonderful person. He said, you knew him, right? You're Rabbi Plouchek? He said, I want to tell you something. He said, ever since my father came home from the summer, every time he opened up his Gemara, he said, he's performing for the conductor of the World Symphony. And that's what we all have to do, all our lives. We are conducting ourselves for the conductor of the World Symphony. We're performing for the conductor of the World Symphony. So there's some people that can be very bright and they can know so much. And there's some girls who can accomplish so much. And sometimes another girl looking at those things, another person will say, who am I? What can I do? No. Every little thing that you do is that note that the conductor is looking for, because to the conductor makes a difference. Maybe to the people down the block it doesn't make a difference. Maybe to the people in your shul it doesn't make a difference. Or the people of your community. But the conductor of the World Symphony, he knows. You were supposed to be doing that mitzvah and you didn't do it, and it hurts him, because the world then is not perfect. So I want to tell you a great story. You know, I'm not of German descent. But anybody here of German descent knows that a grandmother is called an Oma in Germany. Right? So, you know, right? You know my daughter-in-law, my daughter and my son-in-law. My son-in-law, Shlomo David Pfeiffer, he's a Yekki. He's a German fellow. I mean, he comes from German descent. But, so he has an Oma. Now, when he married my daughter, I adopted this wonderful lady as my Oma, Oma Rober. She's one of my favorite women in this universe. Now, I know maybe it's not so nice to say, but she is 95, so I can get away with it. Now, Omar Roberg, Bali Ayin Hara, Bali Ayin Hara has over 100 great-grandchildren. My Dasi, Chaviva's daughter, is number 100, so she got a special gift. Oma's working now, you know, towards 200. So Oma is a very, very special person. She lives in Detroit. And any time that I see her when she comes to New York and I go to Detroit, they always like to talk to her about her life history because she's absolutely a phenomenal person. So she tells me that in 1939, she had just been married. She was in a town called Stuttgart in Germany. And she would teach secular studies in the day school, in the Hebrew day school, and her husband taught Limudei Kodesh. And eventually when they moved to Detroit, that's exactly what they did. He taught, Alex Roberg taught in the day school, the Hebrew studies, and she taught the secular studies. So she told me that in 1939 already the Germans were making tremendous problems for all the Yidden. And any Jew that walked the streets had to wear a J on their collar or on their jacket sleeve and the lapel, I should say. And what happened was J stood for Judah or Jude, Judah. And a woman had to wear it on her dress, on her blouse. And when a woman would come into a store wearing the J, the storekeeper was not allowed to sell her any chocolate, any butter, any oil. Only a certain amount of bread, certain amount of milk, and only 4 eggs for a month. 1 egg per week. That's all she could have. So Oma told me that every Friday she would take the egg for that week and she would bake her husband a very special little cake. And that was the specialty food that they had for Shabbos Kodesh. They couldn't afford more, but at least she made something special for Shabbos. What happened was one Friday morning while Alex is in school teaching, she takes out the egg, she opens it up in a glass dish, and it has a blood spot. Now you know that if an egg has a blood spot, it's treif, you can't use it. So she's thinking, oh my heavens, what am I going to do? I'm not going to be able to bake this cake with covered Shabbos. So she looks at the blood spot and it's just on the surface. It didn't pierce the yolk. So she's thinking to herself, well, maybe if I could just smear it off and there'll be no remnants of it, so then maybe it's kosher. She said, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't do it. I should ask a rav. But there were no rabbanim left in Stuttgart in 1939. And her parents were already gone. So she told me that she was thinking, look, I'm sure that if I would ask a rav, the rav would say, look, you have no food for Shabbos, very little. It's L'Kovet Shabbos. You know, you're poverty stricken. For you, it's okay. So she figured, so good, so she'll use that egg, right? That's Mustam what the Rav would have said. And besides, what happens if, let's say, years from now, she meets a Rav and she asks him if she should have done it. And he told her that, and he would tell her, no, you shouldn't have done it. So good, so she'll never do it again. But now, what is she going to do? But then she told me she was thinking, no one would know the difference except me and Hashem. And she said, my Alex, he's relying on me. Most men don't know anything about kashrus, as all of you will find out eventually on this side of the side. Right? You're lucky if they know what side is milk and fleishiks. Right? So my Alex is relying on me. How can I do something to deceive him when he's relying on me, even if he'll never know the difference? So she decided she's not going to use the egg. She threw it out. She was crying a little bit. And she washed out the bowl. Now the question was, does she use next week's egg for this week's cake? Because, you know, she doesn't want to go a Shabbos without the cake. But what's going to be next week? Who knows if they'll even be living next week. So she decided, you know what? I'm going to use next week's egg and I'm going to use it for this week. So she told me she washed out the bowl very well. There'd be no remnants of the previous egg. And she cracks open the egg and 2 yolks come out. And she told me, I want to tell it to you exactly as she told me. She says, sometimes it's only a small and seemingly insignificant message that one gets from Hashem, but it's all a person needs to carry them for a lifetime. Those 2 yolks was as if Hashem was smiling to her. Thank you. You did the right thing. You did the right thing because it was only me and you. And you were performing for the conductor of the World Symphony. And nobody would have known the difference, but the conductor would have known. And that makes all the difference in the world. I want to tell you, over here, you have these videos that literally just came out today of Morocco, Spain, and Gibraltar. Tremendous, tremendous stories and history. But I want to tell you about the most moving moment of the trip. The moment that changed every single one of us. The moment that was so powerful and so painful. And that's the reason that many, many people go to Morocco. They go to a town called Fez. Now, the young men on this side will know that the Rif, Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi, is one of the greatest Mefarshim on Shas, and he came from Fez. That's why he was called Rabbi Yitzchak Alfasi. Alfasi, that's where he came from, Fez. But in Fez, there's a grave site of a 16-year-old girl. Her name is Sulika. Sulika Chashwal. And thousands of people go to daven at her kever every year from all over the world. And they say people who daven there are helped in tremendous ways. Who is this Sulika? What was she so special about? Listen to this remarkable story of a 16-year-old girl. This Sulika was 16, and she lived in a town called Tangiers. Tangiers is the port town. If somebody's traveling from Morocco to Spain, you get on the boat, you get on in Tangiers. That's where she lived. She was very beautiful. And a wonderful daughter, a dedicated daughter to her parents. And one day, a Goyish prince, a Muslim prince, is walking by, and he passes through an alleyway, and he sees her in the backyard, and he decides this is who he wants to marry. Now, a Muslim can't marry a Jewish girl. The only way he could possibly marry her is if she's going to convert. So this guy obviously had a lot of family that had a lot of good political connections. So he goes to his father. He said, I saw the one that I want to marry today. But I know that she's a Jew. So the father says, okay, we'll take care of it. And they go to the parents of Sulika, and they say, we want your daughter to convert. And they bring out Sulika. Sulika says, of course I'm not going to convert. No, but you'll be part of the kingdom. You'll have wealth. You'll have jewels and diamonds and clothes. It'll be fantastic for you. She says, but she'll my vintage. She's not going to do it. So they said, well, we'll give you 3 days to think about it. I'm going to come back in 3 days. And they come back in 3 days, and of course she says she's not going to do it. So they said, then you're going to be killed. You're going to be killed. We're going to kidnap you, and you're going to be killed if you don't agree to convert and join Islam. They say they're going to come back in 3 more days. And of course she goes into hiding. When they come back and she's not there, they kidnap her mother. And when Sulika in hiding heard that her mother was taken, she came out of hiding. And she goes to those people. And she says, I'm not going to convert. You can do whatever you want with me. They said, we're going to make a mishpat in Fez. Fez was the big city. That's where the king was, and that's where the royal court was. And a Rav, Rav Tzarfati, came to her in her cell. He would bring her food every day, and he said to her, Sulika, don't you realize that if you do not convert, hundreds of Jews are going to be killed because of you. There's going to be a pogrom, and you are going to be the one that causes all these yidden of death. She says, how can I be mechal Hashem Shemayim? So Rav Tzarfati says to her, what about Esther? Esther lived with Achashverosh. He was a goy. Listen to what Sulika, a 16-year-old girl, tells Rav Tzarfati. She says, it says in the Megillah, Lohigida Esther es ama v'es maladata. Esther did not tell who her nation was or her birthplace. Ki Mordechai tziva l'Hashem, lo yisagid, Mordechai told her not to do. She says, you know why Esther was able to live with Achashverosh? Because nobody knew she was a Jew. But if somebody knows you're a Jew, how could you be mechal Hashem Shemayim? She says, I'm not going to do it. I'm different than Esther. Esther didn't, nobody knew that she was Jewish. And they told her that they would drag her in the streets. They would tie her to a wagon, they would drag her to the streets until her neshama gave out. Or according to some versions, they said that they would hang her in a public square. Listen to what she did. It's not to be believed. The night before, she knew that she was going to be killed. She had this long dress. And there's two versions to the story. Some say she actually took the long dress and sewed it into her legs, so that as she was being dragged in the streets, it wouldn't raise up and it wouldn't be a lack of tznius. And others say that she took it and just tied it underneath both her legs. so that when she was hanging and the dress would be blowing in the wind, it wouldn't blow up. It wouldn't raise up. And the next morning, Rachmana Litzlan, she was taka killed. And thousands of people came to her levaya. And that's why thousands of people come to that Mokem Kodesh, to that Beis HaKvoreis of Selika Chashwal and Fez. Because she performed for the conductor of the World Symphony. She had a heter, she wanted. Ratzafati told her she could get away with it. But that's not what she wanted to do. She did not want to be Mechal Hashem Shemayim because she was performing for the conductor of the World Symphony. You know, many of us spend so much time in yeshiva and in college and school, and we learn a great deal. And sometimes a person can have some chalisha sadas. A person can feel, I don't remember it all. There's so much. How I'm supposed to, Hanukkah, lashkicham teresecha, right? The goyim, they wanted to make sure that we forget Torah. We don't even have the Greeks today. I'm still forgetting everything that I learned. You know, it's just so much. So I want to tell you a great story. You know, we told this story in Vilna. There was a great Talmud Chacham, but this story happens when he's 9 years old. His name is Rav Zev Gustman. Rav Zev Gustman, Rav Velvel Gustman, he had a yeshiva, he was a Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Netzach Yisrael. When he was 9 years old, his father wanted to take him to the Chofetz Chaim. And he said that in the beginning he didn't want to go because he was a masmid, he was so busy learning, but then something came up and he said, okay, I'm going to go because I want to ask the Chofetz Chaim a question. And he came to the Chofetz Chaim and he told him that he's learning Bava Basra. Bava Basra is the biggest Masechta, 176 blot. So the men here will know that on Daf Kuv Dalet, Kuf Hei, and Kuf Vav, there are many, many mathematical Rashbams that are very difficult. And this 9-year-old boy said to the Chofetz Chaim, what should I do? Should I learn them? I'm going to forget them anyway. They're so complicated. I may understand it as I'm learning it, but I'm going to forget it eventually. So listen to what the Chofetz Chaim said to him. A tremendous yesod in life. He said, Shikha, forgetting, is a cataract. What does it mean that it's a cataract? A person has a cataract, it doesn't mean he's blind. It just means that there's a blockage of the vision. You remove the cataract, then it's there. He said, every one of us has to learn Kol HaTorah Kula. Because once you learn it, it's in your brain forever. You might forget it, but when you come to the Olam HaEmes, it's going to be there in the brain for you. And he says, that's why you have to learn it. And that's why girls should learn Tanakh, and they should learn Halacha, and they should learn Musar, and they should learn Hashkafa, as much as you can. Because once you learn it, it's there forever. Rav Gifter, it tells Rosh Hashiva, once told me. He said he once went to a doctor after he passed away. I found that it was a Goyish doctor. A young doctor, he said, doctor, I'm in such a depression. Because I learn in the morning and I forget at night what I learned. He was already old and he had Parkinson's disease. And the doctor said to him, Rabbi, it's only because of the medication, that's why you're forgetting. But when you come to the eternal world and you'll be off medication, it'll all be there waiting for you. So we shouldn't have chalisha sadas. We should try to learn as much as we can. Because it's in the brain. I remember I once went to a siyum that a friend of mine made, Benny Lackman, Rabbi Freifeld was there. And he said to Benny, I know that you finished this masechta, and you might feel bad because you might forget it, but just remember this. If Torah goes in one ear and it goes out the other ear, at least it went through your head. And that's a great lesson. Because when you learn anything, it washes out your brain. So I want to tell you how to remember everything. Listen to this Klal Yoker. It's absolutely incredible. Listen to this. The Klal Yoker tells us, those of you with pencil and paper, watch this. The word shokach. How much is the word shokach equal? Who can figure it out? How much? 328. You don't even need a pencil and paper. It's amazing. Okay? Now the word zohar, zayin kof resh, how much is that equal? 227, right? Now watch this. It's unbelievable. 328 minus 227 is how much? 101. Oh, the Klal Yoker says a gewaltig thing. What does the Gemara tell us in Chagiga? Ein adoy meshena prika meya pa'am l'shana prika meya ve'echad. Is no comparison to a guy who learns 100 times, a guy who learns 101. So the Klal Yoker said, what's the difference between 101, 98, 97, what's 101? He says, genius. Every time you learn something, you remove the koyach of shikha. If every time you learn it, you remove and you weaken shikha. Shikha is equal, as we said, 328. If you learn it 101 times, you bring down 328 to 227, which is zohar. That's how you remember it. If you want to learn 101 times, you're not going to forget it. But that's the genius idea of the Klal Yoker. that a person learns 101 times, that's what the Gemara is telling us, that we learn 101 times. So we spoke about the Zayas, not being murkav with the Goyim, being separate, having that wall, that mechitza, and we spoke of the importance of learning Torah, because that's really what the Yevanim wanted to do. But let's talk about a different aspect now. A different aspect of what Klal Yisrael is all about. And Allah Nisim, it teaches us, Yiborim biyad chaloshim. The strong people were given over in the hands of the weak one. The Greeks had a big army. We had a weak army, but we won anyway. Rabin biyad ma'atim. Rabin biyad ma'atim means they had so many, we had so few, and we won anyway. Rishoyim biyad tzadikim, v'zeidim biyad oiske teresecha. A Yid has resilience. A Yid is able to survive. We have been able to survive all the generations. No matter what has been thrown at us, a Yid is able to survive. And you know, many of us go through very, very difficult times. How does a person go through difficult times? How is a Yid so resilient? So I want to tell you something very interesting. After the Second World War, so many Yidden in Poland had died, many, many Ger Hasidim. And they asked the Ger Rebbe, the Sfas Emes, write a letter of Chizuk to the people who have lost so much. And listen to what he wrote, a pasuk that we all know, but listen how he darshened, and we can learn a great lesson in life, because we all go through challenges. Every single one of us has challenges in life. Nobody gets away scot-free. Just remember that, we're all in Golas. And just because it looks like everybody or somebody else in your class or in your community has it good, that's only because you don't know what's going on by them privately. We are all challenged in different ways. So the Rebbe wrote, he wrote a letter to our brothers in Klal Yisrael who have been spared the sword. In whatever place you may be, Hashem should be with you. And then he writes the pasuk, Vahi Erev, Vahi Voiker, Yom Echad. We all know that's in the beginning of Bereshis. There was evening, there was daytime, one day. And listen to what he says. Vahi Erev. Sometimes in the same community you have darkness. You have people that are struggling without jobs, without nachas, without shidduchim. Vahi Boiker. And you have in the same community people that have light. And they have, it seems everything is going good. Yom Echad. It all comes from that source of illumination. That's Hashem himself. We have to know that everything that happens to us in our lives is all orchestrated by Hashem. The Erev and the Voiker. That's by Yom Echad. Hopefully one day we'll be able to understand it. So I want to tell you a story that happened in my neighborhood. It's not easy to listen to this story. In 1996, in our neighborhood in Kew Gardens, there's a Silberglite family. And Rachmana Litzlan, there was a terrible fire that broke out in the Silberglite home. And one of the little girls, Chana Bela, died right away in the fire. Her bubby also died. Her grandmother died. And she had one more sister. She had another sister that was badly burned, Masha Miriam. I remember visiting Masha Miriam in the New York burn unit, in the Cornell burn unit. And she struggled and struggled from that day on at Shivas of Atamas until Chol HaMoed Sukkos, and she passed away. So now the Silberglites have lost a mother, I should say actually a grandmother, and two daughters. And believe me, it was Chol HaMoed Sukkos. You're not allowed to say a hesped on Chol HaMoed Sukkos. But when you see that little coffin brought in to that funeral parlor, everyone was hysterical crying. You didn't have to say anything. But there was a Rav, Rav Arya Ginsberg, who has a daughter that was in Masha Miriam's class, and they asked him to get up and to say Divrei Chizuk. And listen to what he said. We should remember this all our lives. He says, the Chidah asks a question. We know that on Yom Kippur and on Tisha B'Av we tell the story of the Asara Haruge Malchus, how they were tortured and how they were killed. And the Piyut tells us, Sorfei Mala Tzoku B'mora. The Sorfei Mala, the Malachim, they cried out by Rabbi Shmuel when Rabbi Shmuel was being tortured, Zu Taira V'Zu Schara, this is the Taira and this is the reward. He was such a tzaddik. How could you do such a terrible thing to him, Hashem? Hashem answers, On Sabaska Mishamayim, Im Eshma Kol Acher, Epoch Asa'olam Lamayim L'Toyo Vavoyo. If I hear one more word, I'm going to bring the whole world to emptiness, to Toyo Vavoyo. So the Chidah asks, what kind of answer is that? Rabbi Shmuel is being tortured. The Malachim are asking a question, well, God, why are you doing this? Say, I don't want to explain it. What kind of answer is this? I'll bring it to Toyo Vavoyo. I'll bring it to emptiness. And the Chiddah gives a tremendous mashal that we should remember. The Chiddah tells a story about a king who wanted to have the most gorgeous suit ever made. The only problem was that the king knew that in his country, the best tailor in the world was a Jew. And he hated Jews. So he had no choice. He calls in his Jewish tailor, and he says, listen, I want you to make me the most gorgeous suit that was ever made. He said, Your Honor, I'll be happy to do it. Just give me a certain amount of material, and he gives him the amount of material. And sure enough, 3-4 weeks later, the tailor comes back, and he puts on the suit on the king, and the king looks like $1 million. He looks fabulous. Everybody comes there, and they are just amazed at what this guy looks like. Until the queen comes. The queen takes a look at her husband, and she says, Your Honor, you really look great, there's no question. But I want you to know that the tailor is a ganav. He said, what are you talking about? He says, he made you a beautiful suit. But where's the rest of the material? He took the rest of the material and he kept it for himself. You gave him the most expensive. He says, wow, you're right. I didn't even think of that. You're right. I gave him a lot of material. He calls in the tailor. He says, you ganav. You talk and made me a beautiful suit. But where's the rest of the material? He said, Your Honor, do me a favor. Go into the other room, change it to another suit of clothing, and come back here and bring me the suit. And he takes a table and he puts out the suit and he starts cutting it apart. He said, what are you doing? He said, I want to show you something. And he shows him the lapels are double lined and the belt line is triple lined and he's got cuffs and pockets, deep pockets. Everything is double and triple lined. Everything is so seamless, so to perfection. And he takes apart the whole thing. He says, measure it. It's all there. He said, what did you do? You ruined the suit. He said, yeah, but now you understand where it all went. So that's what Hashem said. Hashem said, the world was empty. That's how it was in the beginning. How could a person come and ask a question? They don't know. They don't know the master plan. A person comes and he lives 70, 80 years and he thinks he knows the whole master plan. That's what Hashem said. He said to Eve, Eifah Yisa B'yasti Yaretz, where were you when I founded the world? You tell me, Hagidim Yudati Bina, if you're so smart. A guy walks in the middle of the shir and he asks the Rebbe a kasha. Rebbe says, excuse me, sir, you walked in 20 minutes late. You can't ask a kasha now. You come in the middle of the movie, you can ask a question. What happened? You walked in late. Listen to this shot. You won't believe it. Listen, it's mamash adorable what the Chafetz Chaim says. We say it in Ashrei. Listen to this. Shemer Hashem es kol yavov v'yashkol ha-rashayim yashmid, right? Let's say a guy walks in late. So what does he hear? Es kol yavov. All who Hashem loves, v'yashkol ha-rashayim, and all the Rashayim yashmid, he wipes out. Hey God, what are you doing? Excuse me, sir, you walked in late. What about the guy who leaves early, right? What does he hear? Shemer Hashem es kol yavov v'yashkol ha-rashayim. Hashem loves and protects all who he loves and all the... God, what are you doing? Excuse me, you died early. You didn't live to see the end of the story. Teretz says that we don't live long enough to know the master plan. We have to know God is in our lives. I want to tell you a story. I'm telling you, you're never going to forget this. A lady calls me up a couple years ago. She says to me, Rabbi Korn, you got to give me a chizuk. And I'm thinking, what am I, instant coffee? You know, like I got to give her a chizuk. Like, what does she want? I said, what's the problem? My husband's out of a job and my wife and my kids are sick and this one needs a chizuk and this one's got problems in school or whatever. She says, but I don't want you to think I don't see God in my life. I see God in my life. It's like the FedEx logo. I said, the what? She said, the FedEx logo. You ever see the arrow in the FedEx logo? Now, if you never saw the arrow, you are about to see something that will absolutely stun you. Who sees the arrow in the FedEx logo? Oh, this is so great. Watch. Look at their faces when they see it. What? You see here in the E and the X? You see that? Oh, what? You see it now? Look at that in the E and X. You see that arrow? You see it now, Jason? You see it? It's unbelievable. You see, look at the white in the E and the X. Right? It's amazing, isn't it? Where's the camera guy? He should focus in. I put away the camera already. Right? So now she says, once you know this arrow is here, even if you can't see it right away, you know it's there. Once you know God is in your life, He's always there, even if you can't see Him. So now every time I see a FedEx truck, I think of God. I think of Hashem. Now watch this. Every time you see a FedEx truck, the first thing you're going to see is this arrow. And just remember, Hashem loves you. That's what it's telling you. So it's a great lesson in this FedEx logo. Because it shows us that the arrow is there even though you can't always see it. And most people... Do you see it? By the way, did you see it? Yeah. You still don't believe it. Oh, we'll show it to you later. He uses UPS. That's the problem. So the idea is Gibboirim Biyat Chaloshim. We have this stick to it. personality. We have a resilience because Hashem is on our side. And that's why sometimes when difficult things happen, like the recession, it's a whole talk, but it's not for now. People are out of jobs. People are struggling with shidduchim. People are looking to have children. Doesn't mean that Hashem is not there. You know, one of the most painful things that ever happened, most of you, many of you were not even born yet. In 1994. So some of you were born, right? Were you born in 1994? You're born in 1994. I just don't know when. That's all. So listen to this. In 1994, a terrible thing happened. Some of you may remember or certainly read about it, that Nachshon Waxman, that young tzaddik, that soldier was captured by Hamas. And the whole world was davening for him. The whole world was crying and pleading. They went to the White House. They tried all kinds of pressure. 100,000 people were at the Kaisel, davening for Nachshon Waxman. And then Rachmona Litzlan, over Shabbos, he was killed. And then Motzei Shabbos, there was the Levaya. And his father said something at that Levaya that will go down in history forever to Moshiach. His father said that I know that so many people davened for his son, that he should be saved. And we daven to our Father in heaven. And a father has a right to say no. Imagine that. A father has a right to say no. Mr. Shem, you'll all have children and grandchildren. And some of them will want to borrow the car on a Saturday night. And you're going to say no. You say, and the kid is going to say, Dad, you're not listening to me. Ma, how come you not give me that candy? Why would you let me hang out with her? And your mother says no. And you're going to say no. And the kid will say, you're not listening to me. I listen. I told you no. No is also an answer. That means if sometimes we go through a difficult aspect, a difficult time in life, it doesn't mean that Hashem is not listening. It means that Hashem feels this is the best thing for us right now. Sometimes we may not be able to understand it. But a Jew has to remember, that's what we say in the Al HaNisim. Giborim biyad chaloshim, rabim biyad ma'atim. A Yid survives. No matter what, we survive. Because we have that power. Because the Rabbeinu Shel Olam loves us. So I want to tell you one more thing, and then we'll review and end with a fabulous insight. Pasuk tells us that when Yosef was born, when Rachel gave birth to Yosef, Yaakov said to Lavan, Shalcheini, send me away. Now I can leave. Now I'm set. So the Shem Yishmur, the Sochet Shavu Rebbe, he asked a question. Why, when he had Yosef, was he so confident, Yaakov, now you can send me on my way, I'll be okay. What about Yisachar? Yisachar was learning. Yehuda was Malchus. What, all the other shift they call? Why Dafka Yosef? And the Shem Yishmur says a tremendous thing. Shem Yishmur says, you know why? Because it's in the name Yosef. Yosef means to add, to want more, to grow higher. He said, once I have a child in Golos that's never satisfied with the status quo, he always wants to do more and go higher and higher, that kid I can take into the Golos with me. I'm not worried anymore. You know what the mitzvah of Chanukah is? It's the only time in the whole Yontif, in the whole year, by any Yontif. Mitzvah Chanukah Neir Shabesai, V'mahadrin Neir L'chol Echad V'echad, V'mahadrin V'shama Yemir Yem Rishin Madlik Shemayna, higher, 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 V'kan V'elech Moisif V'haylech. We go higher. There's no such din. The first night of Pesach, eat one matzah. The second night, eat two matzahs. The third night, eat three matzahs. You got to make Kiddush in one sukkah, and there's two sukkahs and three. There's no such thing. Only on Chanukah, Moisev HaHoylech, we go higher and higher. Every one of us on this Yontif has to make a commitment that we're going to go higher and higher in the things that we do in Klal Yisrael. Maybe we have to make a commitment that we're going to do something that we haven't done before. If you never be saying Tillim, from now on, five Purakim every day. Or two Purakim if you never did it till now. If you don't have a Seder Mishnayis, from now on, a Mishnah a day. And if you have a Seder Mishnayis, instead of one a day, two a day. Moisef Ha'ilech. You know what I think, and I guarantee you that this will change your life. That's a guarantee. You know what you should do? Moisef Ha'ilech, to do something that you never did before? Start doing a Chesed for somebody else every single day. And write it down. Keep a notebook of one good thing that you've done for another Jew. And I always say to husbands and wives, I'm not talking to husbands and wives, that they have to do if they know what's good for them. But I'm talking outside the house. Drive someone someplace. Help somebody with their homework. Not during the test, I mean. But, you know, besides, that's not a chesed. Get your head cut off. if they catch you. But the idea is, write down, start doing a chesed a day, Hashem Tilcha. The Pasuk tells us, you know what the first would say, Hashem Tilcha, God is your shadow, just like you do for others, Hashem will do for you. You want to be protected? You want to have great stuff happen to you in your life? Start doing for other people. And even if you do three or four things, don't write down more than one thing every night before you go to sleep. Keep that notebook. And I guarantee you, your life will change. You'll be a different person. You won't be able to go to sleep at night until you did something for somebody. You know what's one of the things that I do? For me, it's very easy to write. Okay, I love writing. My mother taught me writing, whatever. For me, it's easy to write. I'm not telling you to do this, but I happen to know one or two people, unfortunately, that are in jail. I try to write him a postcard almost every other day. Today I got a letter from this guy who I wanted to stop writing because he never wrote me back. And I was very upset. I mean, I've written the guy 40, 50 postcards. How could the guy not write back anything? He wrote me back a letter today. Your mama, she ripped my heart. And of course I'll continue writing him after that. And he wrote me, I can't thank you enough. Nobody thinks about me anymore. I'm banned from society for whatever I did. I'm sorry. He's up in a jail, up place, a half hour outside Rochester. He's going to be there another year and a half. He said, you know why I never wrote you back? Because I'm in denial. I can't believe that I am where I am. And I'm so humiliated even to write my return address that I'm in a prison. And so it's so painful for me to even write down the address of where I am. So I beg you to forgive me that I never wrote you back. But I want you to know that every single word that you write me is such chizuk. And I don't write it much except what I'm doing in life. But you remembered that person. How many of you have a Bobby or a Zadie someplace that nobody calls? That you don't call them? Only before Yontif? They're lonely. You're their grandchild. You're their nachas. You're their whole reason for existing in life. Before Hanukkah, call them. Tell them that you thought about them. Tell them that it means something to you, that they're alive and that they're well. And if they're not well, call every once a week. What is it with a cell phone? It's nothing. People want to be remembered. You do a chesed to somebody. Hashem sees you remember others. Hashem is going to remember you. That's the moisa for ha'ilech. Every one of us has to make a kabbalah this Hanukkah. What are we going to do moisa for ha'ilech? It's not just lighting the second and the third and the fourth candle. It's what Yosef was all about. That's why Yaakov Avinu felt the confidence. So let's review quickly what we said, and we'll end with a brilliant, brilliant thought and a great thing. Let's remember what the Chazon Ish told us. The Chazon Ish told us that as you get closer to the light, whether it's the light of Torah or the way we're translating, the light of Hanukkah, our shadow is smaller because we realize that we're not as great as we thought we are. And we have a lot to improve, and we can build on what we've done and what we are. We're all good, but we could all be better. Let's remember that we should be like that Zayas. Just like the Zayas is not a Murkav, it doesn't get attached to anything else. That's what the Ponev Yisharov told us. Jews are fire. Goyim are water. Water puts out the fire, except when there's a mechitza. The walls of the Beis Medrash, the walls of the house are our mechitza. We shouldn't talk like the Goyim. We shouldn't watch stuff like they do. We shouldn't act like they do and dress like they do. We have to have that mechitza. When we have that mechitza, we as the fire will control the water. Let's remember Lashkicham Teresecha, that Hanukkah is not just a victory, a wartime victory, a battle on the battlefront. No, no, no. That's not what it's all about. They wanted to make sure that we're going to forget the Torah. We hold on to that daf. That's what Rabbi Meir Shapiro told us. That's how Rabbi Akiva survived. Literally and spiritually. Holding on to what we learn. Whether it's for the girls, whether it's Halacha, Musar, Hashkafa, Tanakh, Chumash. There's so much. You hold on to that. And you study it over and over and it becomes part of you. That's what the essence of what a Yid is all about. Let's remember that beautiful story about the conductor. How that conductor knew the difference of every note that was played. Because he's the conductor and every conductor knows the notes. And that's why Oma Roberg, she was performing for the conductor of the World Symphony. And therefore even nobody would know the difference, but Hashem knows the difference. So nobody should ever have Chalishas Hadas. You daven well and you think, who cares? Hashem cares. You learn an extra daf, you do an extra chesed. Nobody knows, the community doesn't care because there's a lot of people doing chesed. No, but Hashem knows. And if Hashem knows, you're performing for the conductor of the World Symphony. Let's remember Salika, the mysterious nefesh that she had. Let's remember never to be despondent if we forget anything that we've learned. Shikha's only a cataract that's going to be in the brain forever. Let's remember that we are resilient. And when things happen, Hashem is there for us. That's the FedEx logo. Vayera vayvayke yayim echad. We don't live long enough to know the master plan. I'll never forget when my father was sick. I was here in Washington Heights because there's a hospital that was not far from here where my father was, and I stayed with Rav Schwab for Shabbos. And I remember I came home after Musaf, and Rav Schwab said to me, "How's your father?" And I said to him, "I have betachon that will be well." And he taught me such a lesson. He got very strict with me. He said, "Betachon does not mean that your father's going to get well. Betachon, faith, does not mean that your father's going to get well. Betachon means that whatever happens, happens for a reason, and hopefully one day you'll be able to understand it." And sure enough, my father passed away shortly afterwards. But he taught me a great lesson. Faith in Hashem doesn't mean that everything's going to happen good. Bad stuff happens. But it doesn't allow us to be broken. That's why we're all here together, brothers and sisters, to be machazik each other during the difficult times. Let's remember, Moisef v'Hoylech, that's what Yontif is all about. We have to make a commitment, especially in a time when we have off on vacation. There's less learning, there's less Yir Shamayim, there's less involvement in everything that we do here in the yeshiva or in school. We have to make sure that we don't let our guard down during the days off during Hanukkah. It shouldn't be Chas V'Shalom, Lashkicham Terasecha. We shouldn't let our guard down, Adarava. It should be Moisef V'Hoylech. I just want to end with this magnificent thing. The B'nai Yisoscha tells us, I always used to think, always, what's a dreidel? A dreidel is just a kid's game, right? Listen to what the B'nai Yisoscha says in Yerushi. Repeat this Friday night at the table. And tell the whole family, tell everybody this great, great message. The B'nai Yisoscha says that the dreidel is the history of the world. What happened by the first Beis HaMikdash? Who knows? What pasuk does it tell us if a Jew wants to bring a korban? It says, V'nefesh ki sakariv. A nefesh, a soul, wants to get close to Hashem. Korban doesn't mean a sacrifice. Korban means getting close. Koroiv. But what happened? Nebuchadnezzar broke the Beis HaMikdash. We couldn't bring korbanos. Our soul was destroyed. We couldn't get close to Hashem. That's the nun on the dreidel. It stands for nefesh. What happened by Purim? Purim wanted to, Haman wanted to kill out Lahashmid, Laharig, Laaveid. He wanted to kill all the Jews. Didn't make a difference if they were going to convert. He wanted to kill the guf of the Jew. Gimel is the guf. Known as the nefesh. Gimel is the guf of Klal Yisrael. What did the Yevonim want to do? That's what we were talking before. The culture. Lashkicham Teresecha. They wanted to poison the seichel of Klal Yisrael. The mindset of Klal Yisrael. That's the shin. That's the shin. That's seichel. Nun is the nefesh, gimel is the guf, shin is the seichel. Zok to Bnei Yisrael, what about today? Look around the whole world. Hey, hakol, we got all kinds of golosin. The Jews in America, they're trying to poison us. Assimilation is worse than ever because they want to change our mindset. Freedom, all kinds of marriages, all kinds of trefa ways of living. Why? That's the seichel. That's it, trying to poison us. It's saying that's what's right. That's what marriage is all about. It's maturif. It's berserk. But it's a mindset. Hamas is trying to kill out all the Jews. It makes no difference whether they'll convert or not. So today you have HaKoel, the Nun, the Gimel, the Hey, the Shin, the Nefesh, the Guf, the Seichel HaKoel. It spins around. Hashem is spinning that dreidel from on top. And then eventually it falls. And what's the only thing that remains? Klal Yisrael. How does it remain? The Oisiyos of Nun, Gimel, Hey, Shin, you turn it around, is the Oisiyos of Goishna. Remember Goishna in the Torah? What happened when Yaakov went down to Mitzrayim? Ves Yehuda shalach lafonav el Yosef lahoyres lafonav Goishna. He sent him to Goishen. Goishna, you know why? To build the yeshiva. That's what Rashi tells us. To build Torah. Goishna represents the Torah. The Nun, the Gimel, the Hey, the Shin. That's the only thing that remains. The Torah of Klal Yisrael. That's what we hold on to. Not that they should allow us lashkicham Torah secha. Okay, you're the math man. Goishna is equal how much? Come on. 358. The word Mashiach. How much is it equal to? It's got to be 358. Otherwise, I wouldn't have asked you. Right? So Mashiach is 358. Goishna, the letters of the dreidel. That's the only thing that's going to remain when? When Mashiach comes. And listen to this. You can go crazy from this. I saw it this Shabbos. Rabbi Avadi Yosef says, he quotes a Mashiach. You know what it stands for? Madligim Sheminas Yemei Chanukah. Isn't that awesome? Mashiach is going to come. It's Hashem on the days of Madlik and Shemoinah Shemei Chanukah. Mashiach is the gematria Goishna. Goishna is the letters of the dreidel. That's the history of the world. That's spinning and spinning, sometimes out of control. But eventually it's going to fall. And Klal Yisrael remains because we are resilient. Maybe she should help that all of us should have a lichtika Hanukkah. Kiner mitzvah v'toyra or, that's the real light. We all have to light our own fire of mitzvahs and or, v'moisev v'hoylech, and v'zeicha, to see Mashiach on those days that we are madlik in Shemoneh Tzimei Hanukkah. May it come in our day. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for listening.